Members, I will call this committee hearing Ways and Means to order on April 27th. Welcome, members. Welcome, folks in the public. I'll start by reading off of the welcome and our safety measures that we've been taking. Welcome to the Minnesota House of Representatives. We appreciate your interest and participation in the legislative process to ensure everyone can view, hear, and understand today's proceedings. We ask for your cooperation in maintaining decorum and civility throughout this hearing. For safety, security, and comfort of all attendees, please note the following guidelines. I, the committee chair, maintain control of these proceedings and establish the following expectations. Signs and placards are not permitted in the hearing room. Verbal outbursts, shouting, or disruptive behavior will not be tolerated. Applause or other audible demonstrations are not allowed. For safety reasons, standing or sitting in walkways and aisles or standing or obstructing at your chair is prohibited. If you require any accommodation, please speak with our sergeant staff. They are identified with the gold ties. Troopers and house security personnel are present to ensure everyone's safety. Those providing testimony will be given specific time limits, which must be strictly observed. If you receive an entrance ticket, please retain it as it may be required for reentry if you leave the hearing room. Failure to comply with these guidelines may result in a removal from the hearing room. Our goal is to conduct these proceedings efficiently while assuring everyone the opportunity to observe and participate appropriately. Thank you for your cooperation and participation in the legislative process. With that, Co-Chair Torkelson, have you had a chance to review the minutes?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I've reviewed the minutes and I recommend their approval.
Chair Torkelson moves to approve the minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Minutes are approved. Up first, members, we will have an overview of a House budgetary solution. Nonpartisan staff, would you please walk through that budgetary solution?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. So today, I'm just going to describe what is in the budget resolution before you. And as a reminder, in the even years, a budget resolution is not necessarily required in the House rules, but this one reflects the bills that have either been previously voted on and passed out of Ways and Means or are being heard today. So my understanding is that it will be updated for the next Ways and Means hearing to reflect the bills that will be heard on that day as well. So I want to just point out a few things on here. There's also a one-page tracking sheet that goes along with this, and it reflects it should reflect the same numbers. Let me know if you see any mistakes. But so on the budget resolution, it's titled Bud Res 06 on the top right-hand corner. And on line 1.4, it references an amount of $41.1 million, and this is the total additional change that is reflected here for the 26-27 biennium. So in addition to the base that was set, the base and the appropriations that were set last legislative session. We always have an amount in there for the budget reserve and the cash flow account. Those don't really change. And then I will just point out the committee bills that are in here. So there is an amount for the elections bill that was previously heard. The higher education bill was previously heard, housing as well. Public safety was previously heard. And then today, the workforce committee bill will be heard. That's the $358,000 on line 1.14. And any amendments that may go on today, we would update this document and reflect the change from those numbers in the future. So if a number doesn't look right on here, these are subject to change. There's also a zero change limit set for the healthcare access fund. That's on line 1.17. And then the workforce committee bill also spends $401,000 out of the workforce development fund, which is outside of the general fund, and that is listed on line 1.18. And just one additional thing to mention, the overall limit that I referenced, the $41 million, that also includes other individual bills that are being heard or that have passed as well. So if there are any questions, Mr. Chair, that's it.
Members, any questions? Carla Katiza-Watum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to you and Chair Torkelson. Do we anticipate that there may be another budget resolution coming forward with any additional agreements in the coming weeks, or how should we anticipate moving forward to the end of session?
Thank you, Chair. As we move other packages out of the committee, we will set resolutions for those as well. Yeah. Any further questions, members? Members, I move that we adopt the budget resolution as described. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Oh. Budget resolution is adopted. Member, we do have several items on the calendar, on the agenda today. First up will be House File 3732. Chair Pinto, please make your way up to the desk. Chair Pinto, I believe your motion is to place House File 3732 on the General Register.
Correct, Mr. Chair.
Correct. Chair Pinto, I see that we also have multiple amendments. Would you like to address the bill first or have the amendments addressed prior to?
Mr. Chair, there's one amendment that is, I believe with the agreement of the chairs, that I might move. I'll just note the bill before us is Workforce, Labor, and Economic Development budget bill came out of the committee chaired by Chair Baker and me. Contains a number of provisions. The A7 amendment, there was a fiscal note that we received regarding the establishment of a healthcare workforce grant program in the bill. I might at this time, if it's okay with Chair Baker, would move the A7 amendment. I think the other amendments can be discussed a little bit later, but it might make sense to do that, Mr. Chair.
A7. Yep. Chair Baker.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I do concur with my co-chair. I'd like to accept the A7 as part of our bill. There's a lot of good things in this bill, and this is part of that very small cost of $40,000 or $41,000. Now, we actually did find some savings in this as well for that exceeded that just a tiny bit, too. So I would like to ask the members to accept that A7.
The A7 amendment is before us. Any discussion, members? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor of accepting the A7 amendment say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? A7 amendment is accepted. Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, and actually, I should have noted, and thanks, Chair Baker, for saying that actually the savings in the bill are a little bit more than the, in general fund, actually a little bit more than the $41,000 for some programs that were appealed, et cetera. So, members, the bill before you contains a number of proposals relating to our Department of Labor and Industry in Article 2, relating to Department of Employment and Economic Development and the rest of the bill. There are a couple of funding proposals, quite limited, that relate to reform of our grant programs, one initiated by Chair Baker that would ask the Governor's Workforce Development Board to establish a subcommittee to examine direct appropriations and make a recommendation to us regarding certain organizations that should receive funding with community input. That's in there. And then a proposal that I had initiated to establish an Office of Community Investment similar to the Office of Justice Programs within the Department of Public Safety. Both of those have costs. The rest of the bill does not, except for the A7. I think that's all correct. And certainly happy to have questions that I can answer. And then I've appreciated the partnership with Chair Baker. And then again, there are a couple of amendments that I think maybe members are offering, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. There are a couple of amendments. The first amendment is a sixth amendment, which I will offer the A6 amendment. The A6 amendment addresses the business release program that we have also discussed in Workforce Development Committee. The business release program would be asking for $100 million to be divided between the Minneapolis Foundation and the St. Paul Foundation, $50 million to each one of those foundations, with a required subgranting, to the Minnesota Initiative Foundations, which provide grants to businesses in greater Minnesota. These resource grants will be allowed and provided to businesses that have been harmed during the operations of Metro Surge, which were not relegated to the Metro, but were we saw harm around the entire state of Minnesota. These resources are critically and vitally important because with these businesses are not provided resources, some of them could close for good. And we know the economic impact that could have on the community. Jobs lost, services not being provided, and a community asset will be lost for good. So I ask members to accept this amendment and attach it along with this bill and move forward and provide resources for these businesses that have been harmed in the community. Chair Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. and to members, we've had a lot of discussions around this issue in our committee. Again, we've had a lot of great testimony from members that are small business owners in the state, in my area. It was a real impact to businesses. It doesn't mean we have the right plan today to do anything. Here, 2-3 years ago, there was $100 million put into a plan called the Promise Act, and right now there's still $70 million sitting there that has not been sent out yet. And people right now can apply to that fund today for this if they want to do that. But we are not good at giving out money, members, and I think that this is a good concept to think that we're helping them. But until we get more good, solid conversations about how do we make Minnesota more affordable with less mandates and bring the cost of doing business down, these small businesses that we're trying to help today will have a much better chance of surviving the long-term process of being open in Minnesota without these heavy mandates that have been put in place over the years. So I can't accept this amendment today for that reason, and I would ask my members to also vote no on this amendment as well. It's not ready. We need more real support for our businesses and not just handing out grant dollars. So with that, I'm going to ask for no vote.
Any further discussion? Chair Noor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I think Chair Baker mentioned the Promise Act program. That program was designed in a different way with different rules, which will not be for those who have been impacted by the Operation Metro Surge. It's a different classification, and application process matter. And if we're going to be making those changes, I don't see an amendment yet to make changes to the Promise Act. What we have here is to address the significant economic damage that was done. If you look at the total, the updated total, it's almost $600 million to the businesses, $250 million loss of wages. This is the right step in the right direction. Members, we do have an obligation to address the economic challenges that the city of Minneapolis and across the state that have been impacted by the Operation Metro Surge. This is a moment that I think we have to step up. Our communities have stepped up. They've shown for their neighbors, they have shown that they are collectively working together. So I'll urge you to support the amendment before us. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members, any further discussion? Yeah. Chair Claiborne.
I'm just trying to decide the right path here. It's really important that we receive relief for the businesses that have been harmed. And that we speak loud and clearly that this is an important piece of legislation. And I think I'm going to request a roll call.
Roll call requested. Chair Gomez.
Thank you, Chair Frazier. I just feel like we're hearing a lot of excuses for not acting in this moment. And I just really like have to stress to you, I know that parts of your district, Chair Baker, were also impacted by this. Representative Kosnick, you know my district pretty well. Like, I have to tell you that there were regular, constant, random incursions of dozens and hundreds of masked, armed, unidentified secret police in our communities. Businesses, some businesses said that they saw a 90% decrease in their revenue because parts of our communities were terrorized by the federal government. Minneapolis is the big, I mean, and again, this impacted, you know, a lot of different communities, but like entire commercial districts empty that are usually bustling and full of people, completely empty. And we have seen over and over the ways that we will intervene as a legislature when certain communities in certain places and certain people who look a certain way are impacted by something that was completely beyond their control. We will take urgent action. We will go outside of our processes in order to intervene on those people's behalf. And I wish there was consistency. This is a thing I feel like many people have brought up over my 8 years here. It's like I have seen the way that these interventions happen, and they can happen swiftly, but only if it's for certain people. And I really wish that you would think about what that is. Think about those small businesses losing 90% of their business. And we're saying we're not going to intervene. They're not talking to us about PFML. They're talking to us about what has happened in the last 3 months. And we have a choice. And I wish we were making a different one. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair Youakim.
I just want to thank you, Chair Frazier, for bringing this forward, and Chair Pinto for the work you've done on this bill, and Chair Baker for the work you've done, too. I just want to say it wasn't just Minneapolis-St. Paul. It was greater Minnesota, and it was also the suburbs. We have a small main street in Hopkins. We're 2 by 2 miles, about 20,000 people. But we have over a dozen restaurants and bars on our main street that all saw decrease in funds over a three-month period. One of them, over a two-month period, $30,000. Just in sales, not including the loss of workers that they still are facing. They tried to apply for the Minneapolis Foundation grant, didn't quite qualify, and any other grants, they need help that they haven't been able to get. So I just want to say thank you for continuing to work on this. I know the other body is as well, and it needs to get out the door this year.
Any further discussion? Right. Oh, Shirley. Bang, sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just, Chair Gomez talked about how there's inconsistencies in how we respond as a state to disasters. I know in the greater Minnesota area, when farmers go through flooding or drought or the avian influenza and diseases, and how quickly we respond to those things as a state, even during a special session. And what we experienced in Minneapolis and St. Paul and the suburbs in the metro area, that's a disaster in itself. It was an emergency crisis for our communities. And I'm appalled at the kind of response that some of our colleagues don't feel that this is not an emergency that we need to respond to. And so I'm frustrated because this is nothing, never before in our, since the beginning of the founding of our country, has our own federal government go against its own citizen. And this is not appalling to you guys. It's crazy what I'm hearing, not being able to provide. When we have the ability to respond to emergency crises, we do it. It's that simple.
Chair Bierman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to stress also, as Chair Youakim did say, it is in the suburbs as well. In my community, I witnessed it a number of times, because reaching out to grocers of the Abyssinian market or the Hispanic markets, of which there are a few, or the large grocery store, which is run by a Iraqi veteran of Hispanic descent, it was impactful to drive over there and to pull into their driveways and to see the unmarked vehicles, which were ICE stationed just sitting in their parking lot. Mm-hmm. And it resulted in the closure of one of the best restaurants in Apple Valley. It resulted in workers not coming in. It resulted in workers being swept up early on and, not coming back to work. Loss of workforce, loss of ability on money. Many of these markets just had to resort to contacting customers and telling them a couple hours of which they would be open, and then they'd be closed the rest of the day. Because you can't work when there are ICE vehicles in your parking lot waiting day after day. So it was impactful, and I saw it, and I know the results, and it's ongoing for these businesses to recover, and we do need to help them. Thank you.
Chair Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as Chair Vang said, we respond to disasters. We help our farmers. We help our communities. We helped our miners last week. I plead with you that you care as much about our constituents as we care about yours.
Any further discussion? Chair Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as I had watched this unfold, there was incidences and the handling of the surge should have been done better. But when I was in business school, we were taught how to build business plans, and we can't plan for everything. There are technology changes, weather changes that affect your businesses, public preferences, and of course, government action can change business operations and plans. And I heard from many of my businesses throughout my district, but also throughout the state, and many handled the challenges very differently. Some closed temporarily, some shifted to other stores that they had and shrank their footprint for a little bit, and others continued to struggle through it and help their employees in the best way that they could. And the challenge with this, in addition to what Chair Baker said, is that we have $70 million sitting unused for a similar type situation. That's the first concern. But some businesses that were similarly affected will not qualify under this amendment. And others may. I'm not certain that 5,000 or 25,000 may make that substantial of a difference in some businesses as well. So I'm not sure. I appreciate that there's reporting requirements in here to report back on the effectiveness of that. So I question the effectiveness. I question using the dollars that we have in other places and somewhat the fairness because a lot of businesses were affected and a lot of businesses will not see any relief under this amendment. And so while I'm sensitive to the overall situation, I don't know that this amendment really satisfies a well-intended amendment, but we'll miss the mark.
Chair Baker.
Thank you, members, for this conversation. Again, I wanted to follow up Representative Knorr. You know, again, I the rules I was told by the NDC folks, they can apply today for these grants for Metro Surge. There's nothing in there that says they can't. So again, we can recheck that. Those are the bankers that are currently using that to vet the businesses that are getting it now. My issue is, again, that bill passed in 2023, $100 million for the Promise Act, and there's still $70 million that hasn't gone out the door. So if that's a 10-year plan, that's not getting urgent money out quickly. We aren't set up for that. So as much as I want to do something, I thought this historic year where we're in a tied house, we could have sat down and looked at business policy that can make Minnesota more competitive, and maybe we could have done some Metro Surge dollars too, but it had to come with a bipartisan support and a plan, and it just didn't happen. But I appreciate Chair Frazier and others to help sit down and try to work through some of these things. We just couldn't quite find it. I was hoping that we could. We still have time in the session, but businesses really do want, in my area for sure, they want business mandate relief as well as anything else. So I just want to make sure that folks can apply, though, for this current money that's sitting there, and they could get out there pretty quickly. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair Claymore.
Thank you very much. And I just want to kind of level set the conversation. We talk about developing business plans, and it's really important that businesses do the hard work to set up those business plans. But in this particular case, I feel like we are blaming the victims and accusing them of not doing the good work. I know in Plymouth, we've had real businesses that have been with us for a really long time who worked their business plan very hard, but yet they still had to shutter and close their businesses because they didn't have the ability to stay open during Operation Metro Surge. I don't know how businesses plan I mean, I brought a bill to this committee last week for Greater Minnesota Public Television that we couldn't get across the finish line because the federal government just shut off their money after they had done their business plan. And we really have to think outside of the political conversation. These are businesses, small businesses, all across our state. And you know as well as the rest of us how they are harmed and how they're struggling. And our small businesses that have been hit on Main Street all across our state, from Operation Metro Surge, need this help, and they need it today. And I really encourage our members to please vote yes and do the right thing on this amendment.
Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate you advancing this amendment, Chair. And I guess I'd say in response to comments, when there was a fire in the town of Medelia in one of our first terms together, some of us, Chair Kosnick and Chair Baker and I, nobody was asking, hey, did the business have a business plan for the fire to sweep through their community? Or when there's a flood, we don't ask, you have a plan for that. We recognize that, that business has experienced a massive drop. I don't know how you have a business plan that can take into account a 90% drop in revenue over 3 months. Like, that just does not work. And what we recognize as a state is that we're going to support those businesses, not only because it's the moral thing to do going backwards, but because it's the right thing to do for the rest of us going forwards, because losing those businesses would be devastating. So we're applying a standard here, as Chair Gomez said, that's very, very different than we do in other situations where there is a disaster that's befallen a business. This amendment is set up in a way to make sure that if a business has lost 20% revenue, has experienced a significant negative impact as a result of federal enforcement activity, and if it's in Greater Minnesota or in the metro, it's going to get support. That strikes me as being written in a very fair and appropriate way. And the fact that it took us 3 years to even respond to the experiences of businesses in 2020 to even get the Promise Act going, to my mind, is not an argument against this now. As Jerry Norris said, that's a very different situation. So let's apply the same standards to these businesses as we do to others, and that is only fair. And by the way, we also didn't ask them and say, hey, wait a second, before we're going to support your business when it experienced a fire or a flood, we're going to hold you hostage essentially for changes to policy that we want. Instead, we're going to say, we're just going to support you. We're going to do other things, but boy, we're going to make sure that you get on your feet. And that's something that businesses need all throughout the state. So I'd urge members to support the A6. Thank you.
As the bringer of the amendment, I will close with this. Thank you for the robust conversation, members. I do think that in this moment, what I heard across around the table is that we all agree and we recognize the harm that was caused. And in this room right here, all of these members with these election certificates, we have the power to do something to address that harm. We've done it in the past. Chair Pinto just laid out many of the times that we've done it and the criteria that we did not ask for to relieve people from the harm that they've been caused. We have the opportunity to do that now. I realize we have more weeks in the session left. We'll keep talking. I know we will. But here is a moment we can move, take a step forward and accept this amendment. And I ask you for your yes vote on the amendment. Clerk, take the roll. Co-Chair Fraser votes aye.
Co-Chair Fraser, aye. Co-Chair Torkelson.
No.
Co-Chair Torkelson, no. Vice Chair Scott.
No.
Vice Chair Scott, no. Vice Chair Igbaje.
Aye.
Igbaje, aye. Rep. Acomb.
Aye.
Acomb, aye. Rep. Backer.
No.
Backer, no. Rep. Baker.
No.
Baker, no. Rep. Bierman.
Bierman, aye.
Bierman, aye. Rep. Gomez.
Aye.
Gomez, aye. Rep. Igo.
No.
Igo, no. Rep. Cleavorn.
Cleavorn, aye.
Cleavorn, aye. Rep. Cagle.
Aye.
Cagle, aye. Rep. Cotiza Watoon.
Aye.
Cotiza Watoon, aye. Rep. Kosnick.
No.
Kosnick, no. Rep. Lilly.
Lilly, aye.
Lilly, aye. Rep. Moeller.
Aye.
Moeller, aye. Rep. Nash. Rep. Noor.
Noor, yes.
Noor, yes. Rep. Novotny.
No.
Novotny, no. Rep. Olson.
No.
Olson, no. Rep. Pinto.
Aye.
Pinto, aye. Rep. Schumacher.
Schumacher, no.
Schumacher, no. Rep. Swiedzinski.
Swiedzinski, no.
Swiedzinski, no. Rep. Vang.
Yes.
Rep. Vang, yes. Rep. West.
West, no.
Rep. West, no. Rep. Joachim.
Joachim, yes.
Joachim, yes. Oh. Rep. Heinzman.
Heinzman, no.
Heinzman, no.
We have a count of 14 ayes, 12 nays. The ayes have it. However, based on our shared agreement, the motion does not pass. Thank you for the discussion, members. Thank you for the vote. Yeah. We have another amendment, Amendment A8. Chair Cagle, I believe you're moving Amendment A8.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll move Amendment A8. This is a federal employee personal loan guarantee program. As we've seen, the TSA will probably run out of money again here in a few short weeks. And so what this program is designed to do is to give those employees a zero interest loan on their paycheck, almost like a payday loan, but a good one because it's zero interest. You know, we know that these workers have been suffering under this administration, and the least we can do for them is to hopefully keep their flat cash flow sustainable. And so I would urge member support of this amendment. We'll answer any
questions. Member discussion, Chair Gomez.
Thank you. Thanks, Chair Cagle. So I thought that it turned out that President Trump just was basically withholding federal employees' salaries kind of to play politics, because wasn't he able to reinstate the pay for TSA agents via executive order? And so isn't, you know, if federal employees aren't getting paid, like, the executive branch can just, with the stroke of a pen, pay them, apparently, if he's not, like, withholding their pay and playing politics with their livelihoods and lives and decides to.
Chair Cagle.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. From my understanding, it sounds like those funds are expected to run out in May. And so without legislative action, I'm not sure that we could expect those paychecks to come in or executive action. I don't know if there's a pot of money in, I don't know, some crypto bank somewhere. But, you know, these are people's, you know, daily lives. And we're asking them to do a super important job of keeping us safe every time we get on an airplane. And the fact that, you know, I have to go to a wedding in June, I really want to make sure that, you know, the folks that are going to get me on the plane are going to be there. And I'm sure every Minnesotan who has plans wants that, too. And so I don't know what the federal government is doing, but I know it's our job to take care of Minnesotans.
Any follow-up, Chair Gomez? Any further member discussion? Chair Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, again, it's disappointing when any employees can't, you know, kind of get paid on a regular basis. I am as disappointed as anybody. That's not in our purview. There's a lot of conversations going on. There's been a lot of votes to try to get things moving. But again, in Minnesota, I have never seen this bill before in our committee, unless I was mistaken, Chair Pinto, but it didn't come to us. This is the first time I've seen this. It's a federal employee personal loan guarantee program. It just sounds complicated with the title. We didn't talk to any financial institutions, at least I didn't, but again, just this didn't have the chance to get vetted at all. Members, I just urge a no vote on the A8 amendment today, please.
Chair Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I certainly agree fully with Representative Baker, but also if you turn to line 5.3 in the amendment, there is no number. This is the Ways and Means Committee. We deal with fiscal issues. A bill with that asks for an expenditure but doesn't ask for how much is certainly inappropriate. I urge a vote, no vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Any further discussion? Chair Pinto, would you like to?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just note that I view this as part of our state's effort to try to deal with just the chaos and the mess of the federal government. And we're experiencing the impacts. We certainly did over the course of Operation Metro Surge and have for quite a while now. So I appreciate Chair Cagle advancing it. Thank you.
Chair Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before I close, I'd like to request a roll call on this amendment.
Roll call requested.
So thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is a guaranteed load program, so it's guaranteed backed by our federal government. So these federal employees are paying or are working and going to get paid eventually if DC can ever figure out how to work together. And so, you know, it's a open appropriation because we don't know when the TSA agents will stop getting paid and when they'll start getting paid again. And so what this does is just allows us to give them an advance loan, and then we get paid back when the federal government pays them. So please vote yes.
Thank you, Chair Cable. No further discussion. Clerk, take the roll call. Co-Chair Frazier votes aye.
Frazier, aye. Co-Chair Torkelson.
No.
Torkelson, no. Vice Chair Scott.
No.
Chair Scott, no. Vice Chair Agbaje.
Aye.
Agbaje, aye. Rep. Acom.
Aye.
Acom, aye. Rep. Backer.
No.
Backer, no. Rep. Baker.
No.
Baker, no. Rep. Bierman.
Aye.
Bierman, aye. Rep. Gomez.
Aye.
Gomez, aye. Rep. Heinzman.
No.
Heinzman, no. Rep. Igo.
No.
Igo, no. Rep. Cleavorn.
Cleavorn, aye.
Cleavorn, aye. Rep. Cagle.
Aye.
Cagle, aye. Rep. Katizawatoon.
Aye.
Katizawatoon, aye. Rep. Kosnick.
No.
Kosnick, no. Rep. Kreisha. Excuse me. Rep. Lilly.
Lilly, aye.
Lilly, aye. Rep. Moeller.
Aye.
Moeller, aye. Rep. Nash. Rep. Nor.
No, yes.
Nor, aye. Rep. Novotny.
No.
Novotny, no. Rep. Olson.
No.
Olson, no. Rep. Pinto.
Aye.
Pinto, aye. Rep. Schumacher.
Schumacher, no.
Schumacher, no. Rep. Swasinski.
No.
Swasinski, no. Rep. Vang.
Aye.
Vang, aye. Rep. West.
No.
West, no. Rep. Joachim.
Yes.
Joachim, yes.
The vote is 14-12. The ayes have it. However, due to our shared agreement, the motion fails. Back to Chair Pinto. House File 3732 as amendment. Open for discussion from members.
Indeed, Mr. Chair.
Chair Noor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I just wanted to ask the question about the repealer sections.
Yeah.
There are several repealed programs that are already in the statute, such as the Green Enterprise Assistance, the Micro Enterprise, the Environmental Policy, several programs that we didn't fund directly, but it seems that we're repealing a lot of good programs that can be reused for the same purposes. What is the intent, Mr. Chair, on repealing those good policies?
Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, and Chair Noor, I may need to phone a friend on some of the individual ones, but these are programs that that DEED had identified and our staff had as well, programs that had not been funded in many years, and my understanding is that the goals could be accomplished. The goals were already being accomplished through other programs. They'd essentially sort of gone defunct. I'm hoping that, as I say, I may need to phone a friend regarding some of the specific ones.
Chair, would you like someone from DEED to?
Yeah, if I can.
Yeah. Please approach. Mr. Baldry, please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Devin Baldry, I'm the Government Relations Director for DEED.
Chair Noor, would you like to repeat the question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think my question is, there are several programs that are being repealed. I understand that we did not put any funding in those programs, but these programs really serve a major purpose. It's only that we haven't budgeted or put resources to support the individual. So what is the plan of repealing some of these good programs that are on that list?
Mr. Baldry.
Mr. Chair, Representative Noor, this is to clean up our statute. As you mentioned, many of these have not been funded in well over 10 years in a lot of cases. Some of these efforts, such as like the Green Enterprise Assistance and some of the environmental policy pieces, have been absorbed into other deed work, such as our Minnesota Business First Stop. So we have some duplicate efforts here as well in some cases.
Chair Nora, follow up?
Just wanted to follow up on the microenterprise entrepreneurial system, which was designed in a way that supports very small, even smaller than any given programs. It's only that we did not include it. I'd like to make sure that is saved in what we're repealing right now.
Chair Pinto?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Chair Nora, you're referring to the microenterprise entrepreneurial assistance. Is that the
correct?
Correct. Yeah, my recollection of each of them is consistent with what Mr. Bowdry said, as opposed to there being distinctions among. I mean, we're really guided by working with staff and with the agency, them coming and saying, look, these are all ones that are that have not been used in many years and are being addressed otherwise. It sounds like, Mr. Chair, you're saying that you feel like the microenterprise entrepreneurial assistance one is one that doesn't fall into that category. And I'm obviously very happy to talk with you further, maybe it's one I suspect. I mean, I think Chair Baker and I, there was no intent to have any substantive impact in this, but just recognizing there were, I'll maybe say Chair Frazier and Ways and Means team that I found from the beginning that there's sort of many, many, I think maybe, you know, a couple hundred programs all over in our statutes, many of which are not used for a very long time. And so part of what we're trying to do is to simplify the programs. We certainly were not trying to have a substantive impact here.
Chair Noor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we can follow up and figure out the best way.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Thank you. Any further discussion, members? Seeing no. Oh, Chair Baker.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, members, I just want to thank you for hearing this bill today. I want to work with, say thanks to my co-chair. We work, and I think early on we were very focused on trying to do our work better when it came to vetting through the system of when there's dollars going out from maybe the Workforce Development Fund to direct appropriations or competitive grants. I really believe that this bipartisan effort that we did the last 2 years has been about improving the system, preventing any potential fraud or folks that are getting in the door. We dove into a lot of different things. And again, part of this bill that makes me most proud is that we are looking at how to do that differently in the future. It did cost us a very little bit of money, but again, with our stakeholders and in a bipartisan fashion, this works out good. I want to mention, too, the uniform report card that DEED does every year is now doing it every other year because we're going to get more and better information this way. I think we were frustrated we were not getting quality information on the folks that were receiving some of these dollars. So we just, again, in agreement, let's do it every other year, but it's going to be a much deeper dive on those folks, which is, I think, going to be a good part of this. Again, I want to say that the Representative Igo's unemployment extension was in here, too, for laid-off minors. I know we had a standalone, too, earlier, but this was an important one. We fixed the vocational rehabilitation services tweak that we didn't quite get right the last session. And again, there was a small rural cancer tweak to our bill that we did pass last year. We wanted to make sure, though, that we recognize more of the Minnesota residents that live there. They could be educated outside, but they had to relocate here in Minnesota. So we thought that was really important, and we appreciate their efforts, too. So, again, thank you, Co-Chair Pinto, for the work that we've done and to get it to this point. I hope that we can pass this along and get it over to conference. Thank you.
Chair Pinto, close.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I should have, in response to a question from Chair Noor, I should have looked at the bill summary from House Research, which does mention each of those, talks about each of those repeals. That microenterprise entrepreneurial assistance program was last funded in 2001, which is not to say it wouldn't be needed, though, so very happy to talk further with Chair Noor. But just for folks who are interested, that's there. I've appreciated the chance to work with Chair Baker as well, and we're continuing to kind of work through a bunch of issues here, but we're glad to get the bill continue to move. So I appreciate member support. Thank you.
No further discussion. I renew Chair Pinto's motion to refer House File 3732 as amended to be recommended for placement on the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Bill passes. You're on your way. Up next, we have House File 3230. Chair Mulder, please make your way up. In Chair Novotny. Co-chairs, thank you both for doing this in tandem. There is an amendment, but let me say, is your motion to move House File 3230 to be placed on the general register?
It is. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. So moved. There is an A6 amendment. Who would like to speak to the A6 amendment?
I can offer that, Chair.
D6. DE6.
DE6. I'll offer that.
Go ahead, Chair Novotny.
The DE6 is just a reflection of the agreements that have come down through this bill that was put together and does include the green. Okay. Does include the green bill that we'll have. Chair Mueller will walk through that later, but this is just the allocation and appropriations part of the bill.
Any discussion on the DE6? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Chair Mueller, please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. As we all know, in Minnesota and across the country, political violence is all too real. And we know that this violence is aimed at elected and judges, but also is a risk to the public at large. Leadership asked Co-Chair Novotny and I to combine several different security bills into this one security package. I will also say that, you know, when it comes to the risk to the public, especially on the Capitol grounds here, we have children that are here on field trips, we have rallies, we have constituents visiting us, lots of people have their day on the Hill as well. And so it's really important that we make sure that this is a safe space, not just for electeds and staff, but for all the people who come here. And the same can be said of the judicial branch and all the courthouses we have across the state. I'll also note that if individuals don't run for office because they fear doing so because of political violence or threats, then democracy loses. So this bill contains, like I said, a number of different pieces. The first is the Judicial Security and Courthouse Bill. That was the language here in the appropriation here was drafted with the help of Co-Chair Scott and Liebling. It includes money for courthouse security grants that will be used across the state, in addition to some more staff, kind of similar to our yellow ties here for the judicial branch, and similar home security for judges that we've had as well. The Capitol grounds will have screening continue, and there's also, this bill accounts for a number of hardware changes and other hardening types of measures. A lot of these have been requested year after year after year and haven't been funded. I'll also note that the Axtel report that was done talked about some of the needs for these different types of hardening around the whole Capitol grounds complex. We also have a section on legislative services. This includes continued home security. It includes the Green and Anderson, Representative Green and Anderson amendment that Chair Novotny referenced. And this is really looking at security outside of the Capitol grounds for those of us in the legislature, and I think we all know the reason why that's necessary. In addition to that, it does provide for MOUs for local law enforcement when they're providing that sort of temporary service when there's credible threat. It also creates a task force to look more broadly at this issue because we've really been focused in past years on safety when we're on the Capitol grounds, and so I really appreciate the work that the two of them did in a bipartisan way to look beyond that. It includes funding for the BCA's threat assessment team, the BTAM unit. That unit proactively identifies threats to prevent targeted violence, and again, that benefits the entire state, whether that's threats to religious institutions, to schools, to lawmakers, or to even larger events and sporting events, things like that in the state. And then finally, there's some DPS deficiency funding in this bill because of the events that started really in June and have worked their way through this fall and this winter. They've had a lot of additional needs that were unexpected and not budgeted for. Thank you, and I'm really looking forward to your questions.
Members' discussion? Chair West.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
One thing that I've found to be somewhat, I mean, overall, this bill is fine. But our capital security increasing with the scanning machines and whatnot, you know, we used to call this place the people's house. And I have not heard that mentioned very much since. I don't walk through a metal detector to access my own property. And this is the taxpayer's place. And we require them to, well, we waltz on by, which to me just doesn't feel right. In addition, they have confiscated people's sewing needles. Sewing needles because they are pointy and metal. Yet, which I believe people should have that right, people can still access this building with firearms, as they should. But the fact that that is happening makes it looking at this scanning, putting more money to this, I think, is, well, one, a waste of money, and two, just not the right thing to do. The other issues, you know, obviously, outside of this building, I very much agree with those. That addresses directly the problem of which we face, but I find it frustrating that we are, I mean, we didn't even vote on having that happen, the scanners at the Capitol. But that's my little soapbox. Quick question, and I probably don't need a follow-up. Does this, you know, I thought we would have to pass legislation to bring scanners to the Capitol, but then it just happened through executive fiat. Does this in any way retain our, move that authority to the legislature rather than having the executive be able to control capital security, or does it not touch that issue?
Chair Mueller or Chair Novotny?
Chair Novotny. Thanks, Chair Fraser. Representative West, that is not part of this bill. That was the decision, as you know, was made by the governor and the security commission last summer. You are correct on the fact that it was not voted on by us, but that was the decision that was handed to us, and the agreement that we have in this bill is a reflection of the circumstances and the hand that was dealt to us, and we're funding that in the most reasonable, agreeable way that we can. If you would like to change the legislation, that'll be something you'll have to do next session.
Can you follow up, Chair West? Chair Katiza-Watone?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Chair Mueller and Chair Novotny, thank you for your work on this bill. And, you know, I think, Representative Mueller, that the fact of how hard you've worked to increase security for all of us and for all of our staff and for all the people that come visit the People's House is definitely going to be a lasting legacy of your tenure here at the legislature, and I appreciate it very much so. I think that the fact that we have a governor who is willing to take steps to increase security here at the Capitol to keep Minnesotans safe, to keep lawmakers safe, to keep our staff safe is a really, really good thing. I think we are lucky that we have a governor who will take action to help keep people safer in this building. And I think it's really rich that those of us who were on an assassin's hit list over the last year are the ones trying to make it safer for all the rest of us. It is not a burden to walk through a metal detector. I would be willing to do so if we would like to mandate that lawmakers have to walk through the metal detector as well. But I think it's also very concerning that we have members who may be carrying firearms, and as a permit carrier myself, I would be willing to show my permit if I want to bring a firearm into this place, particularly for those people who may be drinking and then coming to the floor with firearms. I don't know how that makes us safer. And I think it is this bill is the bare minimum that we can do to help people feel that they are protected, especially in comparison to some of the other state capitals around the nation where metal detectors have long existed. There are other security measures in place. And, you know, when you go to the United States Capitol,
There are many security measures in place as well. And I just don't understand the hesitation to support changes in this bill and some of the changes that have been made to hopefully prevent any unnecessary violence to those who are serving, to those who help us do the work that we do, and to all the Minnesotans who value our state. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you to both Chair Moeller and Chair Novotny for the work on this. I know it's putting a lot of different pieces together that's included in this and kind of emotional work because it affects what we do here in addition to all the visitors that are here at the Capitol. My question is, with spending all this money, who's ultimately in charge? What's the top command? Is it the commissioner? Is it State Patrol? We have a variety of different agencies that would be involved in this, but who ultimately makes some of the top decisions on implementing and utilizing these funds?
Chair Moeller, Chair Novotny.
Thank you, Chair Frazier. Representative Koznick, I'd like to point out several provisions in the bill. One of the Representative Duran's bill was included in this that does direct the training and so lines 8.28, and there's a paragraph starting 9.8 that talks about who is actually in charge and gets important clarification that Representative Duran pointed out that we needed. So that is included in this bill.
Chair Koznick, any follow-up?
Oh, thank you, and we can talk a little bit more offline about it, but that is an important provision. I remember hearing that in transportation. But again, just more broadly, we need to make sure that the chain of command is well-founded and the use of the dollars are well-coordinated was mainly my concern. But we can talk a little bit more offline, but thank you for the work.
Chair Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd especially like to thank the two chairs for the work they've done on this bill. It's not an easy topic area, and they've done a good job of identifying the things that can be supported in a bipartisan fashion. I'd also like to note, Mr. Chair, that both of these members are on the retirement list, and I think we should thank them for their work with a round of applause.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Co-chairs, do you have any close?
I will. Thank you, Chair Frazier. I will tell you that I didn't actually track it, but I have a feeling that we spent more time on this bill than we did our budget bill last year, which spent about 100 times as much. This every line in here has been hashed out and argued and counter-argued. And I don't know a better way to put that, but this is a hashed out, worked out bill that there's not a line that wasn't touched.
Chair Moeller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks also for the discussion today. I do want to just take a minute to thank all of our security staff as well. You know, the things that we experienced in Minnesota, not just electeds, but in general, were things none of us could have predicted, and really want to thank those who work on the Capitol complex, those who were assisting on any of the various events, State Patrol, our yellow ties, Capitol security officers, all of them. I know things have really changed and have been stepped up, but we need to make sure that we continue that funding on to the future and continue to look at improvements to make everybody safer who comes within this building. Thank you.
Thank you, Co-Chairs. I will renew Chair Moeller's motion that House File 3230 as amended be placed on the general register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. You're on your way. Thank you. Up next, we have House File 4195. Chair Khatija Batoum, please make your way up. Chair Khatija Batoum, your motion is to move House File 4195 to the General Register.
Yes, Mr. Chair, that is correct.
Chairman Teresa Batune, that is your motion. Please proceed in describing your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairs and members. House File 4195 is a bill that just makes a very small change to the youth interventions programs. They used to be housed underneath the Department of Public Safety and were long under the umbrella of that department, but they have shifted over to the Department of Children, Youth, and Families. And this bill is technical, cost neutral, and in adopting the budgeting approach of the Human Service, did my mic just cut off? Sorry. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
budgeting approach of the Human Services grants and ensuring that the state could maximize the corresponding federal match dollars, DCYF segregated the percentage for grant administration into a separate line into the DCYF base budget. So this move has resulted in no change to the bottom line overall of the monies that are going to DCYF and then to the grantees, but it did reduce what had remained on the overall budget line for the purpose of calculating the up to 5% usage for the Youth Interventions Program administration. So last year, our budget bill fixed that unintended consequence by inserting a rider into the final budget, and the purpose of House File 4195 is to avoid the need to insert a rider in future sessions. But I do have an amendment that will delete one section, which would have led to an additional unintended consequence of reducing the funding.
And Chair, you noted there's an A2 amendment. Would you like to move the A2 amendment?
That's correct, Mr. Chair. Yes, I would like to move the A2 amendment. And I do have Doug Berg from House Fiscal if there are any specific questions. And my co-chair, Representative West, will note that we are very familiar in the Children, Youth, and Families space with Doug Berg magic, and I'm grateful to him that he...
Mr. Berg, come on up.
...that he caught this.
Introduce yourself for the record, and please describe the amendment.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm Doug Berg, House Fiscal, and actually Ms. Adrians deserves the credit on noticing this, but... The A2 amendment deletes section 2 of the bill, which, as Representative Katiza Watun described, is intended to be part of putting in statute the new administrative portion of the grants, but the section 2 language deletes the current administration. So it would have the effect by itself of reducing the total amount by $355,000. If the amendment is passed, it just deletes that section and makes the statutory change beginning in fiscal 28 and lines the bill up with the zero cost fiscal note that I believe you have.
Thank you, Mr. Birch. Members, any discussion of the A2 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A2 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Amendment is adopted. Chair Katiza Batune, please, do you have any more to add about the bill?
I do not.
All right. Members, we'll open up for discussion. Any discussion? Seeing no discussion, Chair Katiza Batune, please close.
Thank you, Chair Frazier, and thank you, Ms. Adrians. Maybe instead of calling it Doug Berg magic, we could just call it House Fiscal magic. We so appreciate all that you do to keep us on track. And members, I appreciate your support for this bill, so this program continue unimpeded.
Members, I will renew Chair Katiza Watun's motion to place House File 4195 as amended on the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Bill passes. You're on your way. Members, up next, we have our House File 4223. Chair Elkins. Rep. Elkins, please introduce yourself and proceed. And this, members, this bill will be laid over. Mr. Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, 4223. Provides funding for the implementation of the Strengthening Our Homes program that the legislature passed at the end of the session in 2023. and appropriates money to jumpstart the program. So I don't think I need to remind anybody in this room that our homeowners insurance rates have been climbing rapidly over the last few years, hitting certain portions of the housing market, especially affordable apartments and older condo buildings the hardest. There are new roofing standards that are put out by the Insurance Institute for Business and Home Safety that have been implemented in several other states. Alabama is kind of the poster child for this. When they implemented their program several years ago, the homes that had been strengthened under their program did much, much better than homes that had not been strengthened when the next major storms came along. So what we're really looking to do with this appropriation is raise awareness of the program. The insurance industry is offering large discounts on insurance rates for homes that have strengthened roofs. And again, we want to get this, raise the visibility of the program, provide funding for people to strengthen their roofs. A lot of, seniors who own their homes may not have any taxable income, but would be able to take advantage of something like this if there were a cash help for the program.
Thank you, Rep. Elkins. Members, any discussion? Chair Aiken.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Elkins, for bringing forward this bill. I think this is a really great and important program. As you pointed out, we're all seeing large increases in our homeowners insurance, and ultimately it's coming from larger storm events that are impacting our homes. And so if we can be doing things in a way to better protect our homes and also then reduce our insurance premiums, I think that that's a win-win, and really appreciate the focus in the grants looking towards those lower income demographics. So thank you. I urge people to support the bill.
Chair Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Elkins. And I just do want to flag something that with the grant eligibility, we're talking that income is at or below 115% of the area's median income. And that actually affects about 57% of homeowners here in Minnesota. That's basically about between 450,000 to almost 500,000 here in the metro, and 400,000 to about 450,000 in greater Minnesota. So with this, we can, we can harden almost 1 million homes in Minnesota, as well. So that would then also get a premium reduction for those homes as well, and also lower premium costs across the board because the insurance companies are having to do less payouts. And so I think that this is one of the biggest bangs we can get for our buck, and I'm really hopeful that we can continue to work on this and get it across the finish line.
Yeah. Johnsman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Elkins for the discussion today. In Commerce Committee, this bill was heard, and I'm just going to mention some of the discussion that we had specifically to what I think we all agree is quite a challenge with rising costs, purchasing homeowners insurance. Another approach that was discussed that I think could be successful would be instead of a grant program, and Rep. Elkins, I know we already have spoken about this, but just for the benefit of the committee, I think there could be a broad agreement on tax incentives for those that use materials that would harden their homes and other structures to hail, for example. And I use the example of myself, having already done this on my own and seeing the benefit that insurance companies offer. That's quite an incentive. But in addition to that, a tax break, maybe eliminating sales tax or reducing sales tax for materials that are approved could be an alternative, as opposed, like I said, to the grant. And I do hope that that conversation does continue in a bipartisan way. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Elkins.
Rep. Elkins, do you want to respond to that?
I would point out that materials are one thing. That's an important part of it, strength in shingles. But the manner in which they're affixed to the roof is also important. So the labor is also a significant contributor to that. And again, many of the people who could benefit from this program may not have much of a taxable income. They might be seniors on restricted incomes who already own their homes but don't have a lot of cash to upfront the investment that's required.
Chair Heisman, follow up.
I would just agree that maybe we could add discounts to costs in terms of taxes that are incurred during the hiring of those doing the actual work. So that's a terrific idea, Representative Elkins. I'll take that.
Chair Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Chair O'Driscoll and I did have a conversation about this bill over the weekend, and thinking about some of the ideas that we had talked about in commerce, I started doing a little bit more research on how we can best get this money to the people who need it. And I think the biggest barrier for some of these programs is that upfront capital cost. Mm. And people don't have that money necessarily upfront when a storm rolls through. You know, they might have to wipe out their savings account to, you know, fix their home or find emergency shelter or something along those lines. And so with 115% of the median income, I think that really kind of hits on the fact that we are, you know, encompassing people who make between up to, you know, $100,000. And so I think that this really does, you know, and then how much would it cost to administer a tax program or a tax rebate? How many Minnesotans will actually take advantage of it because of that high upfront capital is really a difficult thing as well. And so, you know, I think that this legislation is really thoughtfully designed. And, you know, we can get a lot of homes covered with this grant program.
Members, any further discussion? Chair, Rep. Elkins, please close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, the discussions are ongoing, and we'll see how things turn out.
All right. Thank you. House File 4223 is being laid over for further discussion. Thank you. Up next, House File 3532, Rep. Olson. Rep. Olson, your motion is recommendation for House File 3532 to be placed on the General Register.
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
So moved. Rep. Olson, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for hearing this bill today. Thank you, members. This bill, House File 3532, is going to make a slight adjustment to the way that we allow service members to be buried in our state cemeteries. So currently, the current law says that service members who die on active duty, eligible veterans and their spouses and dependent children are allowed, are eligible for burial in Minnesota state cemeteries for their service. Now, the definition of an eligible veteran is one that has more than 181 days of active military service on their DD-214, which we have a number of people in our state who have served for many, many, many years in places like the Minnesota National Guard, Air Guard, or in the Army Reserve or a reserve component, who have served for many years but never obtained that 181 days unbroken service. So my first portion, my training that actually lasted more than 180 days, they broke it in half so that I wouldn't get the benefits as opposed to my training. They broke it. I had a weekend where I wasn't on active duty orders to prevent me from obtaining the veteran status and this eligibility, which I think is wholly right. But we have many individuals who have spent 30 years in the National Guard, never got that because look at the 1980s. We didn't do a whole lot in the term of active overseas military deployments in the 80s. And then when I first got in 2013, there was a significant drought in deployments or overseas opportunities, which I think is a pretty great thing. When I first got in 2013, nearly everyone had a deployment patch on their right shoulder. And nowadays, those are fewer and far between. And I think that it'd be right for us as a state to say thank you for your service the eligibility requirements would be an individual who completes an entire contract with an honorable honorable discharge, or if they die while serving.
Members, any discussion? Chair Novotny.
Thank you, Chair Frazier. Representative Olson, thank you for bringing this forward. I was not in the military, but I think it's always been important to recognize that the Guard and Reserve units, especially since the global war on terror, they don't decide when they get called up or not. They were just as likely to be as anyone. And I think they made that commitment, and where they were assigned should not affect their benefits and their right to be buried in a military cemetery. So thank you.
Any further discussion? Chair Olson, I have something. Thank you for ringing this bell. I think this is an example of representative democracy. I was unaware of this issue, but having individuals that are aware and close to these issues and bringing them forth with resolutions is very important. So thank you for bringing this bill, and thank you for your service. Close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the members of the committee for hearing this bill today.
Members, with that, I renew Rep. Olson's motion to refer House File 3532 to be placed on the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion passed. You're on your way. Thank you. Chair Torkelson, would you like to give a preview for the next meeting?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. We have posted some bills for Wednesday's 1 o'clock hearing. We may be a little bit over our skis because we're anticipating agreement on some of these issues, and hopefully that's happening. We will be a little bit fluid, and stay tuned to your emails and to the committee website to make sure you're up to date with what's happening on Wednesday. We're in that time of year when we want to move things as quickly as we can, and so we're scheduling things that are still somewhat in process, yep. But I choose to be optimistic, Mr. Chair, and I understand that you might have a plan for Thursday. Would you care to let us know what you're thinking about?
Well, yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. We will calendar a meeting soon, so people stay on the lookout for that, and stay tuned as well as things are in motion and in flux, but we'll continue to work through things, and looking forward to the next hearing. With that, members, we are adjourned.